and welcome back to Relatively Football. Good morning from New Orleans. My name is Theo Lloyd-Hughes, and I'm here with my sister through the screen, through the Zoom, Florence Lloyd-Hughes. How are you, Flo?
I'm all right. How are you?
Can't complain. It's still very early. I appreciate the early wake-up call. It's
yeah,
good to
apologies.
Be... No. I'm here for it. It was such a bumper weekend. I felt it feels good to be up fresh, not lounging too much on a Monday morning. Before we get talking about another great weekend of women's football, I just wanted to try a little something with you. Is that all right? Just like a, you know, I thought we'd try and, you know, it's early, get our brains molded together. So what we're going to do is going to be called a sibling sync up. And just for the listeners out there, I haven't warned Flo about this. So, you know, this is all happening in real time.
Is it a quiz about siblings?
No, it's going to be sort of like me and you seeing if we're on the same wavelength.
Okay. Cool.
So it's the sibling sync up. And basically, okay, I'm going to say a player.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to count to three. And on three, I want you to say the first thing that comes into your head. And I will say the first thing that comes into my head. And hopefully we say the same thing.
Okay, let's go. Let's
do it. We're going to be syncing up as siblings. So the player is Hayley Rasso. And I'm going to count to three. And on three, say the first thing that comes into your head.
Okay. All right.
One, two, three. Ribbon.
Bro. Well, the thing is, I was going to call it a ribbon, but then I've been thinking it's actually tied in a bow. So
it's tied in a bow.
I feel like we're the same, though, because we're both thinking of the ribbon slash bow.
That's good. That was an impressive sync up. I'm worried the Zoom, there might be a bit of Zoom delay, but that was pretty good for a first sync up. So
yeah, that's good.
Hayley Rasso, for me, continued to be one of the stars of the season, along with Valerie Govan. And now Claire Emsley has got in on the action. Everton kicked off the English women's football weekend with a 6-0 thrashing of the lovely Aston Villa, who we do have a soft spot for. How did this one make you feel, Flo?
Oh, it made me feel scared for the potential of Everton this season and what their ceiling might be. They just keep getting better and better with age as the season goes on. I mean, I'm hoping they're not getting too good too early, but I don't think so. I feel like they've got strength and depth, and they're only going to keep building. Got to the FA Cup final, was big, big news for them. And yeah, week on week is just getting better and better. I also felt a bit worried about Villa. We talked about this in our previews about the fact that they weren't in our thoughts for relegation, but things aren't looking great there. Gemma Davies has a lot of confidence from the club and the players because of where she's got them to and how she's such an exciting and fantastic young coach. But at the same time, Anita Santi made her debut on the weekend, experienced defender, and letting in 6 goals is not what you want to be doing on your debut with the experience that she has. So hopefully she can bring a bit of leadership within that team. But I think my biggest worry is that they're making the same mistakes that we saw them make in that City game.
Yeah, they're not doing themselves any favours.
Yeah, we talked about that as a learning curve for them, the fact that they're not going to get time on the ball to play it out from the back and they're going to get pressed quickly, yet they still consistently want to do it. And I think, you know, after a couple of mistakes and after conceding goals, you need to improvise and do something different. And I've seen that with a lot of teams at the moment, and we'll come on to Spurs as well, but I think that Spurs are going through the same thing. It's this stubbornness of when it's not working, consistently doing it. And we see it a lot with football at the moment because there is a obsession with playing out from the back in current football tactics anyway across the whole of the game around the world. But I do think you need to have a plan B, and I understand that when you're on the back foot it's not a great idea just to boot it up, but at the same time, if you don't have the players who are going to cope under pressure or the goalie that's going to cope under pressure, then why just keep doing that to yourself?
Gemma Davies, after the game, did try to put the responsibility or the blame of the loss on herself and the players, saying, we know collectively we weren't good enough. We weren't at it today. It was disappointing. It's very frustrating. We're going to have a lot of work leading up to the fixtures. It's all about principles. That's going to help us deal with whatever scenario is put in front of us. We have to adapt. I thought it was interesting, you know, in the light of sort of the week Birmingham have had and Bristol City as well, and some of these lower teams. I think often the excuse is the gap. You know, we're seeing a league with a huge gap in financials. I think Gemma Davies' comments were interesting to me because I think she's putting this on herself, like you were just saying about making the same mistakes or not learning. I think she is holding Villa to a high esteem. And I do think that, I don't know, that seems like green shoots for me. I love Everton. As we said, so many great players. It was great to see Claire Emsley come in from the cold and make a huge impact with two goals in this game. Are you starting to take them seriously? Last season, they didn't get a single point off a top four side. And so far, they're perfect in the league. They haven't conceded a goal. But they haven't really played any of the top sides, apart from the FA Cup game against Chelsea. And they won't play any of the top sides in the league until November, when they play Chelsea in the FAWSL. Do you feel like we're seeing Everton top three, top two candidate, or is it still too early to tell?
I think we're seeing glimpses of it, only because of the number of chances that they create. I think they could have won about 9-0 on the weekend. Hayley Russo had a lot of chances even before she got her two goals. So I think for that reason, they're showing so much creativity and so much energy that they're going to be hard to cope with for anyone, even if the teams that they're going to play later on aren't going to be making as many mistakes as the teams they've played so far. They are going to be playing Man City in the Conte Cup on Wednesday, and that will be an interesting test, depending on the sort of team that both sides come out with because of the way the group stages are. Perhaps it's been a really intense couple of weeks for both teams, so we might see a little bit of rotation from both managers as they try and rest some players because of the FA Cup final coming up and the semi-finals and whatnot. So they may feel like they can give it a bit of a break, but it'll be interesting to see what happens in that game, because that'll be our first taste of this season's Everton facing one of the title challenges.
On the subject of getting a break, Man United returned after a few weeks off, having not played in the FA Cup, and returned with a very comprehensive win over Brighton. It was Manchester United 3-0 Brighton. And I suppose even with the scoreline, the major story was debuts for Tobin Heath and Kristen Press. Was your FA player okay, Flo, in England? Mine managed to hold on.
Yep, it survived.
No crashing.
No crashing, sadly. I thought I was holding out for some breaking of the internet. But yeah, Heath especially had a huge impact when she came on. I thought Brighton played well up until that second goal went in. They rode their luck at times, but I was hoping they might hold out from 1-0 defeat or perhaps nick an equaliser at the end. They created a few chances, but I thought they were holding their shape fairly well. And then as soon as that Alyssa Russo goal went in, things sort of unraveled quite quickly. Tobin Heath had a big impact, created a few chances.
She was taking
some corners. She got an assist for that third goal. And Lucy Staniforth also made her debut, another addition at United, who's sort of gone under the radar because of the other arrivals. But she looked great as well. She was being her usual sort of like pushy and irritating self, getting into the box and kind of shoving players out of the way because she's that sort of player. She's quite aggressive. And I think things are coming together so nicely for United, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what they can do now as we enter the sort of fourth week of the season. I want to see a step up, and I think Heath and Press will give that to them. I think they can get there. It's just obviously with the injuries and lack of fitness of a lot of their new signings, we haven't quite seen that yet. But I think already in that sort of half an hour that we got to see with Staniforth, Press and Heath on the pitch, they just look like a completely sort of energised and rejuvenated team. And I'm so looking forward to that game against Spurs on the weekend, which we won't go into too much detail about because we're going to have another episode this week. But that is looking like a tasty fixture.
Yeah, I think, in the international stage, for people listening, I think Kristen Press has been maybe a bigger story. She's played up front for Utah, scored a lot of great goals, been maybe more consistent than Heath, at least recently in the NWSL, although Heath, I think maybe in the past, has been a more reputable player. But I think it was cool to see Tobin Heath really stamp her authority on this game, making her debut in the FAWSL. And I thought she just looked like she was born to play in this league and was so good. Do go back and watch or look out for it next weekend. The way she drops her shoulders, the way she's so two-footed that the defender has no idea if she's going to cut outside or inside. And I thought she just kept setting up players. And actually, Kristen Press probably looked a lot more rusty because she clanged the post from about 6 yards out after Heath had completely blown past her defender. And I just thought, yeah, I mean, if you were worried that maybe United were more of a kind of tight, packed in the midfield side, I thought you know, Tobin Heath is going to create a lot of chances. And seeing Alessia Russo score that wonderful counter-attacking goal where she just, on after the turnover, blitzed through, you know, running 40-yard dash right into the box and slotting it home. I just thought, you're seeing that Man United actually have a few more gears to go through, when I think we saw them maybe as a kind of a proper 4-5-1, win the midfield battle, you know, convert a set piece. I did feel for Brighton a little bit. They're just not set up to come back from a goal down. And so you concede the early penalty, you go 1-0 down. And I just think if that goal doesn't go in, you maybe see a very different game. And after Russo got the second, like you said, Flo, and Heath and Press came on, it could have been by a lot more in the end. But I thought Brighton sort of did all right. Megan Walsh was saving one-on-one attacks and punching the ball out. And I feel, I don't want to go back to the FA Cup too much because we've done it at length, but it's annoying to see Megan Walsh come back rested in the cup and play so well again. And I just wonder if Megan Walsh was playing in that quarterfinal, whether you'd see Brighton had progressed. Are you worried about Brighton at all, Flo? Or you feel like they're pretty safe in that just above relegation, sort of lower mid-table zone?
Do you know what? I think they're pretty safe now, actually, having seen how they've played in these first few games. I think there's a lot to be positive about from yesterday's performance. And you could hear Hope Powell on the FA player most of the time, because you hear her shouting her commands. And I didn't actually see her post-match interview, but I don't think she'll be too disappointed with how they played the majority of the game. When they brought on the subs they did, that's quite hard to cope with when you've got that much ammunition and Brighton don't really have that same thing to look to on the bench. I think the issue that they'll have, and it was the same issue last season and is probably one that they're always going to have, is scoring goals. But if they can be annoying, if they can be stubborn and shut up shop and be organised and get points and draws, I think they're going to be fine. I think they're in better shape than some of the other teams who are too disorganised and just ship loads of goals, which we'll go on to talk about them later on. But Bristol City, Birmingham, who did well yesterday, and by the looks of things, Villa now. So that's why I think they'll be safe.
An otherwise stubborn Tottenham Hotspur side, this time without Alex Morgan, travelled all the way to Man City and came away with a 4-1 defeat, kind of like you were just touching on, Flo. Some of these sides will ship a lot of goals, even when they set up to defend. I kind of thought Spurs before the game would, similarly maybe to what you were saying about Brighton, I thought they would frustrate City more. And Chloe Kelly's got an absolutely outstanding goal to open the scoring. And I felt like once again, that kind of really deflated Spurs and you saw their line start to break down. I don't think Spurs were sure what they wanted to do in this game. I think they looked a little leggy, even though they hadn't played midweek. They last time out against Arsenal in the cup. And I think they struggled to know if they wanted to press or whether or not they wanted to sit back and just block everything City were going to throw at them. But in the end, I just thought City had too much. And once again, Sam Mewis is just fantastic at playing between the lines. Anyone stand out for you for Man City continuing to kind of wake up and really show their quality?
Mewis again, yeah, completely agree. She bossed the whole game and she takes Man City to another level. A bit like Villa, I was frustrated with Spurs and how they want to do the same things over and over again, even if it's putting pressure on Becky Spencer, who had that knock in the first half and looked uncomfortable. There was an encouragement to play it out from the back, but she'd hurt her ankle and Spurs defenders were being pounced on straight away by the press. It just seemed like a bad decision. And then on top of that, you have Ash Neville, who was dropped. I think it's potentially because of the mistake that she made against Arsenal in the FA Cup when she
was also culpable for the goal against Everton as well. She was way out of position on that one.
So after two mistakes, and the one against Arsenal, I think, was so obviously detrimental because it swung the whole game in Arsenal's favour. Actually, if that goal hadn't gone on, could they have held out and gone to penalties? Who knows? But that was a game changer. So that was disappointing, and she's a core part of their ability to play it out from the back, and she is quick and she's strong and she has pretty decent game awareness most of the time. So I think that had a really negative effect on them. So I think it was almost like they came with such negativity already there, and the pressure was on because everyone wanted to see Alex Morgan play. And then as soon as people found out that she wasn't on the squad, there was kind of a bit of a disappointment on social media. And Alex Morgan then put out a tweet saying that this is only her second week of full training and she's not ready for match fitness yet. So I think there's a bit of a weird situation going on at Spurs with the fact that yesterday they scored the their first goal in, that's been scored by their own player, which is a bit of
Grace
a worry.
Grace Fisk had the own goal against West Ham.
Exactly, which is a bit of a worry. And if they're putting so much responsibility on Alex Morgan to score goals for them, but she's not even match fit, it's almost like I feel like they're just now biding their time in this sort of no man's land, playing games, but counting down the minutes until Alex Morgan can play. It just feels really strange. And even though I think Rhianna Dean's a decent option up front, they're not really playing to her strength. And it just almost seems like they're holding on, they're clutching on to not very much. And even before Chloe Kelly got that fantastic goal, there were plenty of chances for City. Ellen White hit the bar pretty much just before that. So I am a little bit worried about Spurs, about them falling into a relegation fight if they put too much responsibility on a player who's been out of the game for half a year and they then lose so much of the other kind of core assets which made them a decent team last season.
I really do like Spurs fans, you know, it's not all bad. I do really like Siri Verm at left back. She actually delivered the cross for the goal, Spurs' only goal of the game. She got the assist on that. And I think she's looking like a really nice player at left back. Is very confident at kind of closing down the space when she's not on the ball and very confident at taking the space when she's on the ball. She's got a wicked left foot and she really, really just wants to whip it in quick. I think the problem is Spurs' shape is, you know, especially, I thought they would, I mean, like you said, they were getting pressed at the back and I actually thought they would try and frustrate City more at the back. I think we've seen Houghton under pressure doesn't do so well, but they didn't get anywhere nearer. And Esme Morgan was replacing Lucy Bronze, who was rested. So, you know, City didn't necessarily even have their best 11 out. Janine Becky came in as well. And I thought Spurs missed a trick trying to upset them. I kind of wanted to see Alana Kennedy just play a Mark Sam Mewis. And I felt like Alana Kennedy wasn't sure exactly where she was meant to be. She was basically
She was really ineffective yesterday. Yeah. And as was Gemma Davidson, who I think ever since she signed for Spurs, I talked about it in our first episode about I was expecting a lot from her. She spent a lot of last season out injured. She has so much talent. She's a creative player. But it's just never quite clicked for her. And maybe she needs a bit more support. And when she gets the ball, you know, she's so deep and then you're expecting her to basically just make a 30-yard run and have someone sitting in the box for her to hit with a decent cross. That's quite a lot of pressure. So, yeah, I think yesterday they perhaps didn't play to their strengths. And, you know, even that Ellen White chance to hit the bar, Janine Becky missed an absolute sitter where she kind of slashed it across and she could have scored early on for City. So it could have been a lot worse, to be honest. And I think Spurs need to have a bit of a rethink, perhaps, about how to make the most of what they've got.
Making the most of what you got is probably what I liked most about Bristol City's sort of valiant loss yesterday to Arsenal. They lost 3-1 and they got the early goal. It was sort of, I didn't quite know how to explain it without using a swear word, because when that goal went in, I could not believe my eyes. Yeah, it was kind of a crazy start. Do you think Zintzberger should have done better for that one?
Yeah, she seemed like she was half asleep, really. Bristol also had so much time on the ball, so much time to have a shot, and I think perhaps Zintzberger wasn't expecting any shots. So maybe there was that.
Yeah, I thought Leah Williamson and Beattie did a really poor job. They just let all that space open up between the two centre-backs. And I think Abby Harrison, who scored the goal just in the 6th minute for Bristol to put them 1-0 up, couldn't believe she was given that much time on the ball. And it, you know.
Yeah, it was so much naivety and probably some arrogance that we're going to walk all over this team. Look at our results so far. Look at them. Look at how we beat them last season. And I think that arrogance then, Harrison got the ball, she thought, okay, actually, you know what? I might as well have a go, because I reckon Ten Oxenby's told them, we're not going to get a lot of chances. So if you get, you know, a couple of yards, just have
shoot
a shot.
On sight.
And Zintzberger wasn't focused. She wasn't paying attention. And she dived so late to the ball. And yeah, I think they would all be really disappointed in that. But credit to them. They worked their way back into the game. Captain Jordan Nobbs pulled them back, carried the team on her back.
3 goals in 3 games.
three goals and an assist in 8 days is unbelievable. She's been so good throughout all the games that they've played in the past week and was fantastic yesterday. And I just hope she can stay fit because she's already having a fantastic season. And I think that will do a boost for them, given the disappointment of being knocked out of the cup, but have a come from behind victory. Hopefully this is a positive rather than think, oh, goal, we conceded in the first 5 minutes to a team who are having a pretty crap time of it. Hopefully they don't kind of dwell on that too long because they need to build, they need to create a bit more resilience about them and sharpen things up at times, I think.
I thought Bristol were good as well. Like, I don't think it was just Arsenal, you know, were too arrogant. Obviously the goal was a bit, you know, Abby Harrison was given a lot of time and Zinsberger could have done better. But I think you're seeing, you know, like we were just saying, that like Brighton concede an early goal and they sort of don't really know how to play. Spurs concede the first goal, they don't really know how to play. Bristol City scored the first goal and you saw a team stand up straight, roll up their sleeves and say, we have something to protect, we know what we want. And I think that means a lot. You look at the flow of a game sometimes in football, and I think like goals really affect tactics. And I loved how Bristol City opened the game 4-4-1-1. They go a goal up and they immediately go five at the back, two centre defensive midfielders. And I thought Beth Mead and Miedemar in particular were completely marked out of the game. And if you can, you know, pull players back and make Arsenal ask questions, that's a really impressive trait. The two Gemmas at the back for Bristol City, Gemma Evans and Gemma Purfield, I thought were absolutely fantastic, especially Gemma Purfield, who was kind of playing in that left side of the back five for Bristol. I thought they made it really, really hard for them. And Jordan Nobbs's goal was fantastic. She plays between the lines. And I think that's where Bristol got caught out. You drop that many players back and then that late run on the edge of the box kind of catches you out. I think Bagley had another good game in the Bristol goal, is really impressing. Obviously he has to make a lot of saves every game. But the Arsenal only had two shots on target after 55 minutes. And I think that's a real credit to Bristol. They definitely tired, but I thought they did a really good job. I think they'll be disappointed with the second goal, because it was just a cross in from the left-hand side. And if you push that many players back and you pat the box and you block, you want to be winning kind of simple headers. You know, by the time the Miedemar goal goes in late, it's kind of game over. But I don't know. For me, I know what you mean about the character of Arsenal and Jordan Nobbs showing up, but I kind of actually came away from this game after watching the whole thing of being like, oh, well, you know what? Bristol tactically, philosophically look quite together. And I think after the Chelsea game, I was really worried that they, you know, would feel quite exposed and would feel quite a mess. And I think they've had 2 weeks off and they came into this game with a really, really good attitude. Arsenal obviously coming quite leggy with a stretched squad. Away from the drubbings, one of the smaller sides, the sort of relegation favourites, managed to keep out arguably one of the most expensively assembled FWL sides of all time. In a kind of surprise scoreline, but not a surprise result, Chelsea went away 1-0 winners away to Birmingham City. This game actually wasn't on the FA Player, and it wasn't on Atalanta Football either. So I only managed to catch the highlights of this one rather than watching the whole thing. How did you feel about this one, Flo?
Yeah, I think Birmingham did really well. We've talked a lot about being quite worried about them, but also impressed with Carla Ward and what she's done with this team, what she's done with what she has, and the fantastic run that they had in the FA Cup. And we talked about that being a big confidence boost. And boy, was it a boost yesterday to only lose 1-0 to a team like Chelsea when you're fighting for relegation and goal difference is so vital, is huge. And not only that, they had some good chances as well. Some really, really, really good defending, like last ditch, legendary goal line clearance from Harriet Scott, who I don't even know how she did it, but I think there's a clip on the FAWSL Twitter, but she kind of, Beth England heads the ball down and she manages to slide in and then stop the ball crossing the line. Incredible stuff. And they played with their backs against the wall, but they never gave up. And I think it's a shame because there was so much belief there that they perhaps might be able to nick a point. But I think, again, lots to build on. Chelsea came away with the win, but it didn't really feel like that. I almost felt like in my head it was like Birmingham had got a point because everyone was sort of really talking about them. And Emma Hayes even was praising Carla Ward afterwards. So I think Birmingham kind of stole the show a bit. Yes, Chelsea had a lot of chances that they probably wish after that that they would have taken. There was a goal that I think a Beth England goal that was ruled offside. JPH, our friend Jesse, was not impressed and definitely said it was onside. So perhaps
it was onside. It's one of those things where the Lions person, there's a Chelsea player that is offside, but it's not Beth England.
Right.
So Lions person got confused. So I blame the Chelsea kit.
So
if in doubt, blame the Chelsea kit.
Yeah. So perhaps one of those classic offside situations in the WSL. But yeah, I think another positive for Birmingham, and they just keep building and keep growing, and they're giving themselves a fantastic chance at surviving.
Carla Ward said after the game she was so disappointed to concede from a set piece, but if we perform like that, the points will come. I couldn't agree more, really. I think when you play that well, but then you somehow lose out Rebecca Holloway, who was marking Fran Kirby, you lose out to a Fran Kirby header on a set piece against a side with so much attacking talent, you must think like, well, you know, this shouldn't be how we lose this game. But like you said, you know, seeing people like Craig Hadley on Twitter and a lot of Birmingham fans and the 68 podcasts and stuff, just feeling so confident and optimistic about performance like that. I think maybe it sounds a bit defeatist, but that's, you know, when you're a fan of these smaller clubs, that's what you live for. You know, putting in a great performance is everything. We had a tweet about Fran Kirby, Flo, is that right?
Yeah, we had a tweet asking if Fran Kirby had scored, if that was, so Caden has asked if that was Fran Kirby's first goal that she scored from a header. I think Birmingham fans were disappointed about that because obviously she's not the tallest player in the world. And Theo, you have been doing the God's work and been doing some stats and YouTube watching to find out.
I've been watching Fran Kirby goals all night long, barely got any sleep. Fran Kirby scored a brilliant header to open the scoring. And in fact, it was the only goal of the game in 2018, one of Phil Neville's kind of early stages of his management. Scored a header against Brazil for England, you know, nodding in a really nice Nikita Paris.
Oh, cross. Was that the game? Was that the game at Craven Cottage?
Correct.
No. Yes. Okay.
Maybe.
No.
Actually,
was that against Australia?
Australia was like, it's, okay. You're right on the timeline. Those games were back-to-back double headers. But right. It's the same era. But actually, I think Brazil's up north somewhere. But yeah, it was a 1-0 win over Brazil. Franco,
I think it was at Rotherham's ground, wasn't it?
Yes, the New York stadium. Which is going to be a stadium for Euro 2022, just so you know. So she has scored a header before. I think maybe if you do more digging, she's maybe scored other ones. But that was the only one I could find. How do you feel about Fran Kirby's general performance? She sort of started the season with absolute inspiration, both in the England camp and in a Chelsea shirt. And to see Emma Hayes drop Sam Kerr and Pernille Harder, I don't know if that was a statement, kind of getting back to the Beth England era Chelsea of last year. Do you think Fran Kirby really is kind of the heart of this side now?
Yeah, it's a funny one because maybe Emma Hayes didn't envision Fran Kirby this kind of Kerbenaissance that's happening.
Ooh, love it. Yeah.
To create so many issues with the fact that because the thing about the Pernille Harder transfer is everyone thought this was going to happen next year because that's when her contract was running out with Wolfsburg. So having her here now actually creates quite a lot of problems for Hayes. Good problems, but still problems. And we've talked about how you sort of make everyone work in that team. But it is interesting now with the Kerbenaissance and the incredible season Beth England had and having Sam Kerr there, it's pretty crazy to try and make that work. But I guess with such this chaotic season we're having fixture-wise, Conti Cup this week, another FA Cup on the horizon, actually this is going to be great. Champions League is going to be a great opportunity for her to rotate and in every single game have such good options and firepower. Also, at the same time, will Kirby be able to retain this fitness with her illness and with some of the other injuries she's had in the past? It also depends if she can retain this fitness for the rest of the season. So also that's another reason why it's great that she's got so many options, because before Kirby was out for so long, Chelsea were becoming very reliant on her. And then they realized that they had Beth England just sitting there and that they made the most of that. And it was incredible. But now it's almost like, right, we've got so many options. If something like that happens again, that we won't be worried. But it's about making sure everyone kind of fits in and happy at the same time.
Chelsea will have Arsenal. We'll get to it later, but in midweek in the Conti Cup. So I think resting a lot of players is probably a good idea for Emma Hayes, and obviously coming away with the right result against Birmingham. Resting your best players is always the most important thing, even if 1-0 isn't quite what we're expecting. Just finishing up on Birmingham, a very impressive defensive performance. Rachel Corsi, who was player of the match, will be leaving in January on a short-term contract on loan from the Utah Royals in the NWSL. Do you think Birmingham will, struggle when she leaves?
Yeah, big presence, big player, big name. And, for the situation this season, so much of the players that are here are on a temporary basis. So it's important, I guess, not to get too used to them being part of the package. But hopefully she has a big enough impact and gets enough points on the board before she leaves. Because turn of the year... whatever situation the league's going to be in by that point, it's going to be an intense time for teams like that who are fighting.
West Ham fell to a 1-0 defeat to Reading at home. Rachel Daly making her second consecutive start before she returns to Houston and the NWSL in January. Very frustrating one for West Ham. Before the match, I sort of had this pinned as one of the games of the weekend in regards to sort of competitive end-to-end football. And it sort of lived up to the hype, although I think West Ham will be really disappointed in what was not a very impressive performance. In many ways, they were very lucky that it was only 1-0, but sort of by the end of the game, maybe they were the better side. This game was also another wonderful afternoon of steamed up camera angles and dodgy scaffolding, something that really does make me smile when watching the FAWSL. Absolutely no hate to the FA player. I love and cherish everything you do. The first 20 minutes of this game was actually not visible to the international audience, so I missed it and was catching up on some tweets, but managed to catch the second 70 minutes and, of course, was glued to everything Rachel Daly, who, to be honest, is having a frustrating time, a bit like, to be honest, her time with the Dash in the last few seasons before 2020. She is really relied upon. She drops a little bit too deep. She kind of is chasing everything. And I think one of the problems, which is on Matt Beard, actually, rather than Rachel Daly, is you need to press as a group. You need to know where other people are going to go. You need to close down the passing lanes. You need to change the angles. And I kind of feel like Rachel Daly sometimes is pressing on her own and going down blind alleys and trying to do too much. And then obviously, I actually tweeted it out. I made a GIF of it. Like, you see this moment where she comes all the way back from center forward to win the ball at left back, do a Cruyff turn on Angharad James and then start dribbling up the left wing. And I kind of feel like, yeah, it looks great, but Rachel Daly definitely is not in tune with her teammates yet. And I think it's going to hold back West Ham, who've, have now lost two in a row. This game they would have targeted is putting points on the board, at least one. I do think they got a little bit better when, weirdly, Rachel Daly got moved to right back for the last 15 minutes and Mustafa came on up front, who I really like the look of. There's something about Mustafa where I think she could be a really great player in the FAWSL, even though she's only 18. But she just has presence. And I felt like when she came on, and Reading are quite an old side and they kind of tired. And I thought in the last 15 minutes, which was similar to the Spurs game on the opening weekend, actually, West Ham suddenly, right at the end, looked like they might steal it. Ruby Grant came off the bench as well once Daly had moved back to fullback. And I think is a much more dynamic option in the midfield to connect kind of the attack, defense and midfield. Another, very young player, only 18, and she looks really good. So West Ham have a few bright sparks, but I would be pretty worried if I was a West Ham fan after this one, Flo.
Yeah, I can imagine Matt Beard is very worried. I think it could have been a very different game if Kenza Daly hadn't missed that penalty. So I guess it's a sort of like what might have been situation. But what is worrying is West Ham already had quite a squad of quite hot and cold players, Alicia Lehmann, Adrian Leon being prime examples of that. Adrian Leon had some really good chances yesterday that, to be fair to Grace Maloney, she had a great game. And she was a man of a match for me.
Especially late on, I thought Maloney was one of the only Reading players who kind of across the 90 minutes really stood up. And obviously that penalty save was just fantastic. Daly gets good connection on that and it's just a fingertip save.
Yeah, I mean, one of Leon's best chances, I don't think she made a great connection with it. And Maloney pulled off a good save. But actually, I think Leon sort of scuffed it a bit, and that would be the worry for me. Is on paper they've now got a pretty decent front three with Daly, Lehmann and Leon, but actually I'm a bit worried about how and why that's not working. In the game against Spurs, Leon scored a screamer, but then she'll go weeks without scoring.
You can't expect her to do that every game. That goal against
Spurs.
No,
but it's not about scoring screamers, but that's the problem, is she sort of comes out with really important goals in big games that are always quite decent, but then, I mean, can she do it on a rainy day in Dagenham against Reading? No. So that's why I'm a little bit worried. But I would say defensively, they do look better because it wasn't some of the calamity that we saw against Arsenal. Yeah, the threat probably wasn't as strong, but think about how many goals Reading scored against Villa. Actually, you know, maybe only conceding one was a good result at the end of the day, considering that Reading have some good players who love to have shots, basically.
I hear you. I think the result will be a positive, but I think through the flow of the game, I actually thought, especially in the first kind of hour or so, Reading were whiffing and missing a lot of chances. Daniel Carter in particular, right before halftime, had a header and another shot in the box that I just thought she should have finished it off instead of blazing over the bar. And I think Reading will, you know, the result, a win is a win. It's always the most important thing. We've said that for a few teams today. But I actually think Reading should have been 2 or 3 goals up at halftime. And I think West Ham did well to respond. Like you said, they maybe looked at it and said, oh, you know, it's only 1-0. And obviously, heartbreak for Kenta Dali missing that penalty. But yeah, I kind of thought Reading should have put the game to bed. And West Ham only really looked better when the subs came on and the legs looked fresh. And yeah, maybe, you know, maybe the defense will grow from that. But I think, I don't know, it left me with more questions about West Ham. Gilly Flaherty will come back from a suspension next week. And yeah, I just wonder if we're seeing the beginning of West Ham, you know, like this is just them teething, or if this is going to be the trend for the season. Lots of love to all the breast cancer awareness and the pink shirts. I know Kenza Dali's mother has battled breast cancer, so I'm sure that was particularly inspiring for her, although another tough afternoon with that penalty miss. Anything else you want to bring up from a great weekend of FAWSL football flow? Good weekend for shirt sales?
Yeah, great week for shirt sales. Obviously, Spurs are delivering to the USA, but a club that's done really well with its shirt sales is Man United Women. Mike Keegan in the Daily Mail today reporting in his column that when Press and Heath were announced, Man United's women's shirt sales of them outsold the men's for 3 days off the back of that announcement. So really big news, means my pre-season prediction of a men's shirt outselling a women's shirt came true for 3 days. And it's just a huge sign of the impact that those two players are going to have on the league and on the team, and why it's so exciting that they're here. And also is a big illustration, I guess, to football fans in the UK who were probably sort of aware of the impact of US players. But I guess maybe some football journalists and fans and pundits didn't quite realise how big the impact of the US women's national team, and we're kind of seeing it in real time, and seeing it, hopefully we'll be seeing it kind of with the fashion and what people are wearing on the streets as well, and it's really exciting.
Well, look, we're going to take a quick break and then we'll hop over to NWSL Corner, do a quick roundup, and then let you know what's going on midweek. All right, see you in a bit. Back. This is Relatively Football, and we're just nestling into NWSL Corner. You know, the weather's nice in the American South, the country's burning and everything's terrible, but you know, the National Women's Soccer League keeps on giving. It was another great weekend for the NWSL. Opened up with a kind of, for me, a surprise defeat. Sky Blue losing at home to Washington Spirit 1-0. I really like Sky Blue. I really like what the whole program they got going on there, the way they're bringing in players, the way they're developing players. But Washington Spirit are kind of a similarly kind of young, up-and-coming side, like to play on the ball. And I thought they did really well to hold off Sky Blue. They got a 1-0 win with Kumi Yokoyama scoring a wonderful winner, her first goal in the NWSL. Sort of a little bit of skill to build herself the space, and then she just sliced across the ball and it skidded off the surface. Probably about as good a winner as you'll see in a 1-0. The second game of the weekend was the Utah Royals getting a very good point against the Portland Thorns. And without a doubt, in my opinion, maybe apart from the Houston Dash, the Portland Thorns have been the best side this autumn in the NWSL, especially coming after that 4-1 win over OL Reign. So for the Utah Royals, who were a little bit of a mess, to come and get a point, I thought was really impressive. Le Pielbert, who is the caretaker manager there, is now getting sort of a bit of sign that she might try and keep the job. Amy Rodriguez, shout out to all the mums out there playing. She opened the scoring with a classic Amy Rodriguez goal. Tenacity, being fierce, making sure you're first to the ball, just smashed it home early on, which I thought kind of upset the Portland Thorns rhythm, who managed to get back into the game. Players like Lindsay Horan and Rocky Rodriguez, so good on the ball, really managed to build things. And once again, Christine Sinclair popped up for the equalizer on the hour. Altogether, a really, really good day for the Royals. And Ciara King probably was the player of the match. Just filthy, filthy technique. Oh my God, pulling it left, pulling it right. Such a clever player who got her first goal of the full series last weekend, and I think just keeps on improving. She hit the bar. She was really unlucky not to score, and I think is really turning out to be one of the rookies of the year, and is definitely a player to watch. The final game of the weekend was the Houston Dash, once again dominating.
The big one.
I am speechless. I keep trying. You know, there's been a lot of narrative about the same old Dash, or like this kind of quite cliche underdog theory now that the Dash, you know, who are traditionally one of the worst teams in the NWSL, never been to the playoffs, you know, never finished outside the top five. Never finished in the top five. They have kind of famously been crap, and they got their first ever win over the North Carolina Courage, who are sort of the antithesis of the Dash, are traditionally the best team in the NWSL. The 4-1 loss for the Courage is actually the first time in their franchise history they've ever lost by more than two goals. Anything in the NWSL catch your eye? Christine Sinclair keeps scoring. I know you're a big fan of the Thorns, Flo.
I think that Dash result was really the narrative of the weekend. And perhaps I did see Rachel Daly tweet about an hour ago saying, "My Dash girls just keep doing it." So maybe she's missing them a little bit. Maybe
yeah.
Some warmer weather and not playing in
a wet Dagenham, losing 1-0, playing 20 minutes at right back.
She's a bit like, eesh.
I also wonder, I haven't asked any of the Dash players this in the post-match conference because I thought it would be a bit uncouth. But I wonder if, and actually Clarkson, the coach, talked about it in the game before. He said, you know, we're always a better side with Rachel Daly, but it's really great to see the team scoring goals without her. In the same way that the Dash are traditionally bad, the Dash are traditionally dreadful without Rachel Daly, and they can't score goals. And it's really impressive to see players like Mewis Groom and Sophie Schmidt, who's now scored four goals in four games. She's a defensive midfielder, if you don't know. It's kind of bizarre to see them playing so well without Daly. And I just wonder if Daly's pride, deep down, you know, she won't say this publicly, but I wonder if Daly's pride is slightly damaged to see the Dash be so good without her when for so long they haven't been able to cope. When she's not on the pitch, but maybe that's a private thought. So looking ahead, the Continental Cup, which for those that don't know is the English League Cup. In England, we love cup competition. So the Conti Cup, for those that don't know, is the secondary cup competition, which will just feature league women's club sides. And it starts off with a group format, not unlike kind of regionalized, not unlike sort of a World Cup or Champions League. And so because of the regionalized format in these early rounds, you get some quite big fixtures. So you have Chelsea playing Arsenal this week and Man City playing Everton. So all the games are on Wednesday. And sadly, from what I can see, none of them will be televised, but we'll be catching up on all the kind of radio or tweet headlines from the writers we can get. And then we'll be watching the highlights and getting back to you with a report midweek. But yeah, all the games are on Wednesday. So the club's playing. There's kind of a weird, some of the games are during the day, which is kind of funny for a midweek during the day game. You don't really see that too often, do you, Flo? Tottenham, probably without Alex Morgan, although this game is at home for Tottenham. So maybe you'll see her make, it'd be quite funny if she made her debut with no television cameras there. Tottenham will be playing London City, who are a championship side. No, National League side. Championship, no, it must be a championship side.
Yeah, London City, a championship side.
Because it's a League Cup. And then Chelsea and Arsenal is in the evening game, which will be really interesting. Chelsea rested a lot of players on Saturday. Arsenal have not been resting a lot of players. So I think Chelsea might win that one and Arsenal might have to try and get a rest. Then in that same on Wednesday evening, Wednesday lunchtime in the States, you're going to see Man City versus Everton and Durham versus Coventry City. And then you got Bristol City versus the London Bees, Brighton and Hove Albion against West Ham, Reading versus Charlton, Villa versus Sheffield United, which actually should be quite a good one. Villa being right at the bottom of the FAWSL and Sheffield United being at the top of the Championship. Lewis FC are then playing Crystal Palace, which is another good one, a kind of all Championship affair. For those that don't know, Lewis FC are a really cool progressive club that pay their men and women the same wage and have no owner.
Correction. Not the same wage, same budget for both teams. Slightly different.
Ah.
Yeah. Important asterisk.
Fun facts. Asterisk.
Yeah.
They are a cooperatively owned club with no majority owner, just single share ownership. Definitely something to look into if you're interested in alternative ownership and alternative kind of football culture. And then Blackburn Rovers are playing Birmingham City in the final match day one Conti Cup. So it should be a quite chaotic midweek game where I think we should see a lot of teams rotating players, maybe seeing some players make debuts, some younger players coming through. And maybe in a twisted 2020, we might see Alex Morgan make her debut in front of no one. All right. Well, please keep fighting the good fight out there. Wear a mask. Stand up for what you believe in. And make sure you're getting lots of sleep. And have a great week. We'll see you in a few days. Flo, it's always good to see you. Even
likewise,
on Zoom.
Even on Zoom.
Even on Zoom. Good to have a family Zoom. We're getting more and more consistent. No midweek games next week, so we'll keep teasing. A very special interview is coming your way shortly, we promise. And otherwise, it's goodbye from us. See you later.